I'm the village philosopher this week, and I'm doing some sessions also on a variety of things. My background is in educational psychology, so I guess they thought I could be a philosopher. I don't exactly know why that is, but what village philosopher means at Holden is someone who tries to take the pulse of the village and figure out what's going on and what people want to happen. So if you have something that you think ought to happen here, let me know and we'll see if we can arrange it somehow. But tonight's topic is on the area of good grief. What do I say? And our purposes for this evening are twofold. I hope to take some time to help you assess your own attitudes about losses, especially death, and especially other sort of terminal illness, and other sorts of losses as well. The second purpose I hope for us to gain tonight is to do some talking together about the art of consoling. My guess is that all of you have maybe even more experience than I do in that, and I hope that we can pool our experience and our ideas and what has worked for us so that we can give each other new ideas, because I think we all find ourselves in the situation of needing to console someone, whether it be a death or a terminal illness or a divorce or any sort of loss that might have happened. It may even be the consolation of a person who's lost a pet or any other situation where there's a loss. I think we all spend our lives needing to know how to console and often knowing not what to say. So I hope to spend some time, and you're going to be involved with this time tonight, so if you don't want to talk, you better leave now. No. But I would like you to get involved in some of your own thinking, and you're invited to talk. I found a little poem of sorts, I guess, by a woman named Joanne Kelly Smith. It's very short. People need people, and sick people need people, and dying people really need people. And I think that tells us a lot about the art of consoling and about losses, that we really need each other when we have losses that are significant to us. Just to start out, I want you to start thinking about some of the losses you have had in your life, and I hope I have enough here. I have 35 copies made. What did you find out by filling out this little inventory? Did you learn anything? Or
I learned that I haven't had very many losses.
You haven't had very many losses? Mm-hmm. Was that a surprise to you?
Well, yeah.
Okay, great.
I learned just the opposite.
You learned that. Had lots of them.
A lot more than I would have realized.
Yeah, okay. Others? Reactions?
There were losses that really didn't mean so much to me. There's a variety of degrees of...
Okay, yeah. So if you could have put numbers or something on them, to which was more important to...
Yeah.
Okay, back there.
This kind of ties in with last night. That many of these were not losses, but rather, at least the things here, but rather the beginnings.
Okay. Uh-huh. Can you give an example for you?
Marriage, children, graduation.
Mm-hmm.
I never looked at those as really being losses, but rather new beginnings.
Mm-hmm. Changes. Yeah, okay. He was referring to a session I did yesterday called Transitions. That some of you may have had a chance to be at. Were there some that were strikingly missing to you? Anything missing that, pardon me?
Yes, the loss of the loved ones, you haven't got too many here.
The last one.
You didn't get that one.
So, some loved ones were missing for you?
They're on here. They're back here.
Oh, you turned it over. I see. I gotcha.
I guess I didn't read the problem.
Sure. Were there any others that people thought were missing?
Loss of a grandchild.
Grandchild. Yes. It says child here, but that makes it more specific and personal. Did you say a different one?
No, I was going to say under child.
Yeah.
And your child, grandchild.
Yeah.
Is the loss of a job on here?
Well, profession.
Profession
unless
could be.
Employee role.
Yeah.
You didn't have loss of children before they come to be when they should be home.
Okay. Or rather than death, other than a death, you mean?
Yeah.
Loss to a divorce or loss to a change in your home or that sort of thing?
There's other ways to lose matters.
Okay. Okay. That's striking missing here, strikingly missing. Anything else? Anybody kind of, how did you find doing this? How did you feel doing this? Can you remember? Yeah.
I echo the lady up front. I don't feel I've had any problems.
Do you feel good or bad about that?
Maybe I'm overlooking something. I'm not smart enough to see.
Okay.
I think some losses are so great that others don't seem important.
Okay. This lady's point over here, there's different gradations or different importance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to go.
Brought back memories.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Made you really think back over your life. For me, when I've looked at this and done this, it's kind of helped me remember things that I wasn't remembering. Maybe that's part of your point, too. Jogged my memory. Yeah. And that can be a happy or a sad sort of memory. Yeah, yeah.
It makes you wonder if maybe life isn't a succession of losses.
Life is a succession of losses or changes.
Changes. Mm-hmm. Changes. But if you look at it as losses, that's what it starts out being.
It's
also a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know. Were you at the session yesterday? Uh-huh. Oh, going to say, you know that book.
I want the book. I just started it.
Good, good. Did you want to say something? Or you're just stretching, huh?
Sure.
Okay. Can't stretch too much around me. I'll call on you.
My hands.
Don't sit on your hands. That's okay. I'm going to give you another chance to do some thinking here. This, again, is going to help you look at your attitudes towards losses. This is a 26 question inventory. Do it quickly. Answer your kind of your first reaction to it. The key is at the top. If you strongly agree, agree, tend to agree, tend to disagree, disagree, or strongly disagree, circle that those letters that correspond for each one of these statements. And then there are eight segments, and in each one you need to total up. It will be very understandable, I think, once you get it. Not fair to give directions when you don't have a copy, is it? There is a second page to it that I'm going to start out from this end so that they don't get. Do I just cast those on? Make sure you get, there's a front and back and a second page for this. There's 26 questions. Do it quickly, your first response. Don't worry, there's no right or wrong answers. You won't pass or fail. And you don't even have to tell us your score if you don't want to. Question number 26 is on the second page.
On the sphere of dependency, I am very much afraid that you won't take care of me.
You strongly disagree with that statement. Do you agree that that's you?
Okay, this is what is wrong with the fear.
Yeah. Okay. That's just kind of the title of the section. There's two pages to it. There's only one question on that one. I'm in the saving paper, so I've 26 questions on the little inventory.
was the name of that book that the bookstore had on last night?
The Transitions one?
Yeah, that's correct.
Called Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes.
They didn't have that one.
No, they don't have that one there.
But there's another one said they have.
Yeah. What's that?
Under the broom.
Oh, Under the Broom Tree. I've given you some a table there. This is a anxiety scale, death anxiety scale, developed by Michael Lemming, who's a professor of sociology at St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota. He developed this, and it's included in a book that he has co-authored called Understanding Dying, Death, and Bereavement, which is basically a textbook that he uses in his classes. But I found it to be a real helpful book to me. It's got lots of stories and anecdotes and applications in it. It's a little bit costly because it is a textbook, but if you're interested in this sort of thing, you might seek it out. I didn't have them get it at the bookstore because it is a $23 book. I tend to use the dying as transferable with death and dying with the area of loss, any kind of loss. I think I've been implying that since we started. And I want people to know that when I give you this inventory about death and dying, it also should give you some implications for other sorts of losses. I think that's pretty understandable, pretty well understood these days. That your score should be somewhere, your total score should be somewhere between 8 and 48. The mean score, the middle score, is 24.3. So if you felt like your score was real low, don't worry about that. Mine came out to be 23 point something, and I was feeling really badly about myself, and then I realized I was kind of right there where most folks are. It gave you a table here that might be somewhat confusing, but I thought it would be kind of fun for you to kind of look at and compare. He gives the scores here indicating religiosity of people, how religious they are. I don't know how you judge religiosity, but he did somehow, and maybe you can kind of figure where you're a 3 on the religious scale and see how you compare to other people. Or maybe you can look at the scale and find yourself on that and see how religious you are. But I thought that would be kind of fun to have when you have a time to kind of look over the numbers and that sort of thing. What were reactions to your scores or the questions on this?
That I don't think of these things very often.
You don't think of these things very often.
And I don't want to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought the questions were rather different. Now, question one, I expect other people to care for me while I die. Does this mean hospital care? Does this mean my family? Does this mean a nursing home?
Mm-hmm.
And this would make a vast difference in the answer I'd give.
Sure, sure.
And so I really felt you can't honestly answer that question.
Okay. That's fair, I think. Any other responses or reactions to your scores or any particular questions?
I scored extremely low in some areas and then extremely high in others, and I just realized it's probably because I was with my sister through a long, slow, painful death, and probably before that happened I would have answered
differently.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the ones how they relate differently to each other because of that experience. Uh-huh. Others? Responses?
This number 11, I questioned how it would throw my score off. As being separated from my loved ones, a death makes me anxious. I have a handicapped son who's very dependent on me. Well, my separation from him doesn't bother me. It's what it would do to him.
Uh-huh.
And so therefore that would cover.
That would be more anxiety producing for you.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh, and he's definitely included in those loved ones, mm-hmm. in that heading, yeah.
These papers must be definitely for certain age groups.
But why?
Young people wouldn't be thinking about these things.
Pardon me?
Young people wouldn't be thinking about these things.
I think that's not true. I would disagree with that. Do you want to respond?
I was going to say, I think they would. Their anxiety might be much higher than that. Mm-hmm.
Looking at this, at the statistics on suicide rates with younger people, and then their friends, how their friends are responding to the death of friends, I think the AIDS epidemic now is making a lot of younger people consider death. I think the possibility of nuclear holocaust makes a lot of people consider death implications. I don't want to put you down at all. I just disagree. Yeah. And are you saying that when you were younger, you didn't think about these things as much?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
Since
yeah.
It's aging that one has the tendency to...
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Or if you were a young parent, too, you would be more
anxious. Yeah. Yeah. Number of responsibilities you feel, people you feel responsible for. Yeah, that's a good point. Other reactions to taking this? How did you feel taking this? I didn't see anybody jumping up and down for joy.
I don't think we're supposed to worry about these things.
You don't think you're supposed to worry about these
things?
We're supposed
to worry about tomorrow.
Okay. You give in today and... Okay, one day at a time. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not like the lady ahead of me. I've seen death several times and... when you see them suffer, you let loose differently.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I think that probably helps me understand better.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't like to leave your family, but I'm like one of the people over here. When you have when you're younger and you have young children, that bothers you.
Mm-hmm.
I know it did me a lot more than it does now.
Sure, sure. You wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I felt like there were really two parts to the way things were broken down. One is how it affects me and my family as I'm living. And then what my feelings are when I'm dead. For instance, I have no qualms about being alone after I die. Well, I certainly believe in heaven. And I know that's where I'm going. And of course I have no qualms.
Uh-huh.
I am fearful of dying alone. I have concerns about who takes care of me during that dying process or a long drawn out death.
Mm-hmm.
But once it comes,
okay.
Here I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I found that my scores were very, very skewed.
Because of that?
Well, they were 5 and 6. It wasn't a linear regression. That those in the middle, some of the scores were higher than they were on either end.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't understand how that table
reads. Okay. Well, it's just to kind of, for your case, why don't you just kind of see where you fit in
that's what
not
I did.
Worry about it.
I'm not.
Like this lady over here, you're not supposed to worry about it. Somebody was saying something over here.
As I look at mine, I think that the areas of the greatest concern are those where they affect relationships of persons now,
mm-hmm.
not the hereafter. But the present.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So relationship is a real important thing to you. Sounds like that's what I would say you're telling us.
That's what this says.
Is that true? Yeah. Probably it's consistent with other things in your life. Okay. There's another little table there that helps you kind of think about this inventory in the context of your own death and the death of others. For instance, the first question, I expect other people to care for me while I die. Considering yourself, it would be the fear of dependency. Thinking of someone else would be a fear of financial burden. So there's a comparison here between self and other, and also it's divided, just as you were indicating, between dying and after death, or being dead. The bottom line there on the right is death situations. I think. Death-related situations. I'm going to move on and kind of leave you kind of hanging with this. If you want to talk some more personally about it, I'm glad to do that. But that's kind of why I gave you those scales, to give you a sense of some other things to think about, and then those also those questions that are there. Again, if you're interested in more about this, it's Michael Lemming's book. I want to talk next some, now that you have some thoughts about your own attitudes toward death and dying and losses, I want to talk about the art of consoling. Someone has come to you and they say they have a terminal illness, or someone comes to you and tells you that their child has run away from home and they're looking to you for support. What do I say now? I want to make some, suggest that there are some assumptions that we should not make. We should not assume that that person shares a common meaning about that loss with us. Perhaps if someone came and said, my son just ran away from home, and your reaction to it would be relationship. Maybe the relationship was very poor and this person is relieved to have this kid out of the house. That's a possibility. The idea is not to assume that that person has the same attitude about the loss as you do, that you need to find out what their attitude is. We also need to suggest that don't assume that old understandings remain, that if someone once felt a certain way, they remain feeling that way. You need to check things out with them. Be present with them. Don't look at the past. Find out how this person is responding to this loss right now. When we're considering death, we should not assume that the physical death is all that's happening. I think that's real clear, that there's a spiritual death and an emotional death, a relational death. Many deaths happening when someone finds out they are terminally ill. Don't assume that the patient or the person coming to you with the loss is the only one affected. A year ago, a very close friend of mine was in an automobile accident, and he was hurt badly, and his 4-year-old daughter was killed. The family grieved for Annie, and Ross's injuries. But the immediate family were the ones that really got the care. I discovered at Christmas last year that the aunt was holding lots of anger and had no one to kind of deal with that with her, because she had been the one consoling, and all the attention had really been focused on the immediate family. And the extended family had not been attended to. A year ago, a friend of mine was killed in an automobile accident. I was in Africa on a trip. I found out about it 3 weeks after it happened. All the community of support had kind of gone through those initial days of loss and supporting one another. I have yet to have figured out how I have those first days of support. So we need to understand that the loss goes beyond the immediate people involved. And sometimes I can get real involved. We need not assume that a person who is dying, say, for instance, no longer has a meaningful life. A person lives, continues to live. And I've heard story after story of people who have really done their ministry in their dying days. They have been more of the minister to other people than people ministering to him or her. Don't assume that talking is the only way to say I care to someone. I tend to babble at the mouth sometimes when I'm nervous or I don't know what to say, and you know, I just say things. And sometimes just being there, holding a hand, touching, hugging a card in the mail, a telephone call, just being present, sitting beside someone's bed, can be a way of saying I care. That takes some creativity often. And often we are a culture that's very awkward with silence. When my friend had his automobile accident, I went to the hospital to be with him, and I sat beside his bed. And he wanted to talk all the time because he felt like I was nervous because he didn't have anything to say and I didn't have anything. And I said, it's okay, we can just be quiet. And then he was able to rest because he needed his rest. Don't assume that there is no hope. And sometimes that's a hard thing. Our culture often tells us that there's no hope, there's no chance, that sort of thing. But we should not assume that. On the back of that sheet I gave you, maybe you've all noticed that there's a thing called the Dying Person's Bill of Rights. How many people have seen this before? Okay, just a few. This has been available for a number of years now. And I think it's an important thing for us to keep in mind when we know someone who's experiencing a loss. That I'm just going to read through most of them, and I'll go through quickly. If you have a comment about some of them, say it or raise your hand or something. But I have the right to be treated as a human being until I die or until I'm over this loss. I have the right to maintain a sense of hopefulness. I have a right to be cared for by those who can maintain a sense of hopefulness, however changing this might be. I have the right to express my feelings and emotions about my approaching death in my own way. I have a right to participate in decisions concerning my care. I have the right to expect continuing medical and nursing attention, even though cure goals must be changed to comfort goals. I have a right not to die alone. I have a right to be free of pain. I have a right to have my questions answered honestly. I think lots of times in our culture, we want to protect someone, and we'll be a little bit dishonest with them when we think that they're too weak or not able to hear the truth. I have the right not to be deceived. I have the right to have help from and for my family in accepting my death. I have the right to die in peace and dignity. I have the right to retain my individuality and not be judged for my decisions, which may be contrary to the beliefs of others. And I have the right to expect that the sanctity of the human body will be respected after my death. I have the right to be cared for by caring, sensitive, and knowledgeable people who will attempt to understand my needs and will be able to gain some satisfaction in helping me face my death. To me, it's clear that this is part of the hospice movement. It's part of the philosophy of hospice, where a person has the right to be free from pain, to die with dignity, to be a part of the decision-making, those sorts of things. Responses to this, or some of you have seen it before. Where have you seen it? How have you used it? Go ahead.
We have it posted in our nursing home.
Oh, yeah, you're a nursing home person, aren't you? Do people react to it ever? Residents or family or... That may have been true back for 11 years ago, and hopefully yeah. things are changing.
I was going to say, it was 11 years ago. You know, maybe
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That is a tender spot. Others? Well, these are just things as people who are consoling... To keep in mind that a person who you are a confidant to or a friend to need to remember these things as you deal with them in the day-to-day times with them in their loss. I've posted up here some do's and don'ts of consolation. And I post them only as kind of a starter. Maybe some of you have some that you would see necessarily added to the list out of your own experience. But let's use these as a starter. Do be available to listen, to run errands, to do housework, to help out with details. Be available. Express your own feelings of sadness or sorrow or sympathy or whatever you're honestly feeling, to share those feelings with them. Not to take away their feelings or the realities of their loss, but to really own your own reaction to it and let them know that, how you're responding. Allow them to express their own feelings, whether it's grief or anger or denial. Try to allow them or help them know that it's okay to tell you how they're feeling. Encourage them to be patient. Many times getting over a loss takes a long time. Many of you are probably familiar with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work and the stages of death and dying. There are 5 stages, and unfortunately I think they're misnamed stages because that implies to us that 1 leads to 2 and 2 leads to 3 and 3 leads to 4 and 4 leads to 5. I have people nodding their head no here, they know what I'm going to say, that's not true. You may start out in number 4, you may start out bargaining rather than denial, or you may start out accepting it and then later realize you're really angry. So you may jump around between the stages. I was talking to a woman recently whose husband died last year, and he had been very ill, and she says, I never went through those stages. I was accepting of it right away. And I think she had seen him in so much pain and hurt for so long that it was a blessing to her to not see him so much longer in that pain. And so she accepted it right away. There may be a day that she would bargain again to, if I could only have more time, or, you know, be very angry that it happened. At this stage in life, or why do I have to be alone? Those sorts of things. How did I get off on that? Oh, patience. To be patient. To know that you may not be the perfect case moving from it through each stage, from one to the other, that it may be a long time before you accept your loss. Or you may feel some hurt for a long time. So to be patient with yourself and to encourage that for that person. And then another do is to talk about some special memories when it's appropriate. To really understand that person, or to understand the special times you had when your son or daughter was a kid and now they're gone to college and that feels like a real big loss. Or if you have lost a child to another way. Can somebody add some other do's to the list of in the art of consoling that have been helpful to you or that you do yourself?
Well,
Mm-hmm. Listen with both ears and more if you can figure it out, yeah. Others? Let's move on to some of the don'ts. I hate to be negative. Last, we should have done those first. Don't avoid them because of your own discomfort. I had a friend who lost a job a few years ago, and nobody was going to him because they were really uncomfortable, because he was gay, and they figured that's why he was leaving the job. I called him up, and he says, "You're the only one that's called. Everybody else is too uncomfortable." Don't avoid someone because of your own problem. Sure, it's going to be awkward, but it's going to be helpful that you called. Don't say that you know exactly what they're going through. People are relating to that one. Yeah. We all have common experiences, and there may be a time when you can talk about your experience too, but people probably don't want to hear about your woes right now. It would be more appropriate to say, just to paraphrase back to them, "It sounds like you're really sad today," or it looks like you're having a hard time getting going today," those sorts of things. Rather than, "Boy, I remember when this happened to me." Don't place any shoulds or oughts on someone else. For example, "Well, you ought to be over this by now." That's an old, yeah, go ahead.
I think you shouldn't place any shouldn'ts either. Or you shouldn't feel like this.
Very good, yeah, yeah, yeah. You shouldn't feel like you're a bad person, or you shouldn't feel, yeah. Yep, that's very good. Don't change the subject. I think that's a real temptation when we get to a kind of hard, you know, finally somebody's finally broken through and said something. And it's probably very hard for them to say that. If you don't know what to say, say something like, "Boy, it must have been really hard to say that." Or, you know, or just say back to them what they just said. I put up here, "Don't worry." What I mean there is, don't worry about mentioning the loss to them or to the sickness or whatever it is. There was a young woman here a couple weeks ago. She obviously had a limp that was either a birth defect or a result of an accident. I wanted to know why she had that. And I kind of asked around, then I thought, I'm going to ask her. You know, and I finally, "Well, why is your leg like this?" And she's, "Well, you know, I had cerebral palsy. I have cerebral palsy." You know, and she was fine with her. You know, I think it made her more comfortable that somebody just came right out. And I also have a friend who had his hand cut off when he was 18 years old. He's real open about it and telling the story about how it happened and the struggle of learning to work without a right hand, once you ask. And he doesn't mind. He'd rather you ask than him having to open up the topic. Kids are great about that because they'll ask the questions, you know. So.
In a Bible class this year, they just made a thing and they got all retarded and you would be surprised how many blind person in the community to these children, and they really
asked them the hard questions. Yeah. Kids get the most interesting stuff out of people, don't they? Why don't we all do that? And another point then is, don't try too hard to be happy and bright, you know. Don't try too hard at what you're doing. Just be who you are. Don't try to be something else, or don't try too hard. Any other don'ts that people can think of? You must all just know how to do it, so the don'ts are hard to come by, huh? Go ahead.
I think one of the most awkward positions for me, if I know the people very well, it's no big problem. If you don't know the people at all, it's not much of a problem. It's those in between ones that are the biggest problem.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah. Yeah. What's appropriate for me in this relationship? Is a card enough, or is...
These are slight friends or acquaintances opposed to a little bit.
Yeah. That is a hard situation. Mm-hmm. Yep. Any suggestions on that?
Just go. I mean,
just do it.
Appreciate people.
Mm-hmm.
We had a young couple. Our little town has been a farmer's retirement town for years. About 5 years ago, it suddenly changed to become a bedroom town for an industry. Calaveras, and one of the young couples who worked in the other town and lived in our town, whom I knew and spoke to on the street, but actually had no personal acquaintance, had their second son. They had a son that was 2 1/2. The second son was born without eyes, without part of a nose, and with one ear missing. And of course, this comes back as a grotesque thing. When they did get the baby back home, I bought 2 little t-shirts and went, I hope I don't faint. And that baby was precious. And I was the first one in the whole town. And the little boy, you know, the little 2 1/2-year-old, so excited that there was a shirt for him. And the baby too. And I thought, I almost stayed away too, because thought I didn't know what to say. You do.
You bring up another good point, is to, there's something, to take something. So then you can focus on that to begin with. You know, or for me, if I have something in my hands, I'm a little bit better. I fidget, and then I have something to fidget with. But there's a focus. Somebody else was going to respond to that over here. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say it isn't necessary.
It sounds like to me like your desire is deep, that you really want to do something. And that's honesty and real. If you were being false, then I think that would be wrong to go or to send something or whatever. But when you're honest, you honestly want to respond, I think you should really do something with that deep honesty in yourself.